can buy me love, love, can buy me love. I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. 'Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sheila Krumholz, who is the Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics, a nonpartisan organization that tracks money, politics, and influence in Washington. She first joined the Center for Responsive Politics in 1989, serving as assistant editor of the very first edition of Open Secrets, the center's flagship publication. She has an article at CNN, Will Money Buy the White House? Welcome to Background Briefing, Sheila Krumholz.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And the convention that's just getting underway in Tampa, Florida, of course, it will be delayed a day because of the weather. But I think most people see it as a sort of patriotic display of our kind of Tweedledum parties, each sort of out doing each other in terms of how many flags they can fly and making the most their patriotic appeals to the American people, etc. But what goes on behind the scenes at the various lunches, dinners, events, caucuses, etc., I think escapes a lot of people's attention. And it's worth noting that almost all of those activities that are going on surrounding this convention are paid for by lobbyists and trade groups, all doing business with the Congress and with a potential Romney-Ryan White House. Do you find that that is the hidden story of conventions, or particularly of late?
Absolutely. That is the unwritten rule, that behind the scenes, in front of our TVs, we see a lot of flags and balloons and bunting and people, you know, smiling and clapping and wearing funny hats. But behind the scenes are the parties that they're not invited to or privy to, that the press are not allowed to attend, where a lot of fundraising is happening, a lot of kind of deal making and trading of favors, looking for support, both financial and and other among policymakers, party operatives, and those that they rely upon to feed the beast, the lobbyists, the corporate and labor executives, and those who have the resources both to make contributions and to get out the vote.
So in terms of your article at CNN, Sheila Krumholz, Will Money Buy the White House? You've got some historical data in here that would indicate to me that even going back to recent races, Bill Clinton and Dole, et cetera, that the monthly total that particularly Romney is raising exceeds the entire total of recent presidential races.
Well, part of that is, they say a significant part of that is that the public financing system has disappeared, and that had provided a level playing field for the final weeks of the election for both parties, candidates, nominees, for a couple of decades. So here we are in the midst of our second presidential race in which at least one of the nominees, now both of the nominees, are rejecting public funding for the general, and that means that the race is on, the sky's the limit. They need to suck in as many dollars as they possibly can over the next few weeks, both to the candidates' campaigns as well as to the party committees, and now to outside groups, these super PACs and their nonprofit counterparts. So there's money coming from all sources and going to all these major pockets and coffers and for the candidates now. They're, you know, I doubt either of them are going to surpass by much anyway Obama's extraordinary take in 2008, but we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
And the reason that public financing doesn't work anymore is that it was basically rejected by George W. Bush, and then in 2008 by Barack Obama, and that's it's essentially sort of withered on the vine. Is that what happened? Or become irrelevant, I guess.
Precisely. But it had peaked in the early 80s. That was the point at which the most Americans, I believe it was about 30% of Americans, had signed, checked that, at that time, $1 checkoff, and finally at the end, a $3 checkoff on their taxes to have $1 or $3 go toward the public financing system for our presidential elections. But I think that really had never been appropriately or sufficiently marketed to the American populace, to the voters. And so that there were, it was both, there were insufficient funds coming in, and there, it was not growing sufficient to provide an attractive option if those for those candidates who thought that they could raise far more money on their own, such as Barack Obama in 2008. There was really no question, no option. So in this case, in this cycle, there was really no question that either candidate was going to use the public financing system, and that is, I think, a real shame, because it did again level the playing field, provide serious funding, good funding, but allow those candidates to know that they had enough resources to then focus on the campaign instead of the money race.
And again, I'm speaking with Sheila Krumholz, Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics, a nonpartisan organization that tracks money, politics, and influence in Washington. And she has an article at CNN, Will Money Buy the White House? Now, we are at a very peculiar time in terms of American democracy, where up to 5 million Americans who have voted previously and are registered and eligible to vote who want to vote Democrat are being denied the vote and have to jump through hoops in order to get the vote, whereas a handful of billionaires who are essentially buying the election for the Republicans don't have to identify who they are. So that's an extraordinary disconnect there. And then you've got at this convention starting in Florida a big salute to entrepreneurs, Building America, honoring David Koch, and through Americans for Prosperity. That's one of the events that are going to be going on. One of the things that's so extraordinary about not just the floodgates have been opened by the Supreme Court Citizens United decision, but the other decision, which is a different court, which is the 501c4 tax-exempt foundation that's being used supposedly for some social virtue, is being used now as a black box, if you will, for money. And there's a fear amongst a lot of people that the corporate America is using this device where they can hide behind anonymity, because corporations, of course, when they give money to a Democrat or Republican, or you know, particularly if they're involved in a consumer product, they're likely to alienate half of their customers, since the parties basically divide the country 50-50. So this seems to me to be a device, and it was largely, it wasn't so much created by Karl Rove, but certainly exploited by Karl Rove, that may well be tipped the balance here. We don't know. We talked about how big corporations and lobbying groups are down there in Tampa now popping the champagne and offering yacht rides and cigars and whatever, but we don't know what kind of money they're pouring in, do we?
We have no idea what these 501c political nonprofits are raising, who it's being raised from, and ultimately how much they are spending to shape this upcoming vote. Unfortunately, it is, I think, true that they are using and abusing the tax exempt status of nonprofits, they have found this way to, as kind of wolf in sheep's clothing, to skirt the disclosure limits and have their cake and eat it, to raise unlimited sums from any source. And frankly, they say it's not coming from foreign sources, but it very well could be. We all have no way of knowing. And to be able to run messages that are purportedly coming from some trustworthy group because they're using these patriotic anodyne names. But in fact, we don't know who's behind the messages we're being bombarded with as viewers, as voters. And because of that, I think all of us, Republicans, Democrats, independents, we have no way of truly being able to consider the source. And it is true that most of the money is being spent by conservative groups, but you can be rest assured that everybody's the gloves are off, and everybody across the ideological spectrum is trying to use this this subterfuge now available to them to sell voters possibly a bill of goods. At a minimum, they're not being completely forthright about their messaging because, you know, they know that this is, it's very effective for them to, again, use these loopholes to get around the disclosure limits and to just try to keep it as kind of patriotic and vague sounding as possible while delivering very negative, often very deceptive messages. So I think we as voters, as citizens, can't do our job effectively because we just don't know enough about these groups and the money behind them. And the money may be coming from a really, you know, wonderfully representative, you know, massive number of donors, individuals, you know, upstanding Americans, or it may be coming, as they say, from one single donor, from an individual, from a corporation, from a union, and frankly, again, from foreign entities, corporations, or even governments. We know that there has been, they have the wherewithal in foreign lands to provide the money, big money, and we also know they have the willingness, because we went through the scandals of the 90s, where it was learned that big money was flowing to the parties from foreign entities and even governments on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans. So, you know, I think it is a serious concern, and I think it's unlikely that at this point the tide is going to turn before this election. I just hope that we learn enough about what happened after the fact to consider how this system might be made healthier.
Well, we know that the first thing that Paul Ryan did when he became the vice presidential nominee on the Romney ticket was to go and kneel before Sheldon Adelson. And Sheldon Adelson himself has made it very clear that he actually said that, "I wish that I had never served in the United States military, and I had in fact served in the Israeli military." And he's awfully close to Israel. I'm not suggesting that it's foreign money, but it's certainly money with a lot of foreign influence in his case. And he's the biggest donor so far, at least we know about it, right? In his case, we don't. But at this convention, the American Petroleum Institute putting on dinners and concerts and panels promoting the Keystone Pipeline, that's business before, obviously, a lot of people are going to benefit, including the Koch brothers. So you see the direct connection on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, I'm sure the same corporate bottom feeders are going to show up like sharks in Charlotte. But in terms of the money raising, there's no question that Romney's outstripping Obama every month now. And there's a very disturbing article in The New Yorker by Jane Mayer called Schmooze or Lose. Obama doesn't like cozying up to billionaires. Could it cost him the election? And that posits the question and by interviewing lots and lots of billionaires and big donors to Obama, all of whom feel slighted because he hasn't been stroking them in what is called in the trade, Sheila, donor maintenance. Apparently, Bill Clinton was an expert at donor maintenance, and Obama just finds the whole thing extremely unpleasant. So could that be a deciding factor, the fact that you got a candidate who's president of the United States and who actually wants to do his job as president of the United States and finds all of this groveling for money demeaning? And as a result, he's simply going to be outspent because at any moment, Sheldon Adelson can decide to write a $1 billion check if he wants to.
It's true. You know, I think there are a number of ways to look at this. The candidates themselves have already raised hundreds of millions. Mitt Romney, nearly $200 million. Barack Obama, nearly $350 million for the campaigns themselves. And they have the parties raising yet more for their campaigns, on behalf of their nominees. And a single individual can give at a pop $75,000 to the victory funds, to the joint fundraising committees that are raising money for the party and the campaign. So big money coming from well-heeled donors going to the campaigns and the parties. I feel that despite the fact that there's all this outside money, which can come from any source in any denomination at any time, I do think that the campaigns do have sufficient resources to get their messages out, and that at the end of the day, it's most likely that this campaign, I'm hopeful, that this campaign will not be won or lost based on the money. But it is true in congressional elections, as in presidential elections, that the vast majority of winners are the candidates that spent the most. In fact, in 2010, last cycle, in the House, only nine winning challengers, spent under $1 million. So the fact is, you have to reach a certain threshold of financial viability to even be in the game, to even be considered a contender at all. But then, for the presidential campaign and for congressional campaigns this time, it's just much more changeable at any moment, because someone could swoop in, drop big money, $1 million or $10 million or $50 million, in a very targeted way that could change the course of the election, potentially, even in the presidential, but especially in those House races where it could tip the favor toward one party or another. So I do think that we are imperiled if we are not paying attention to who these people are and how this could be kind of pawns in the game of the money race.
Well, as you've pointed out in your article at CNN, Will Money Buy the White House, Sheila Krumholz, in 2004, Senate candidates who raised the most money won 88% of the time, and House candidates who raised the most money won an astonishing 97.8% of the time. And then in terms of presidential elections, the record's pretty clear. The people that have the most money win, with the exception of Bill Clinton in 1996, who didn't raise as much as Senator Dole, and Ronald Reagan, who raised less than Jimmy Carter in 1980, but nevertheless won in a landslide. So no question that money talks, right?
It does, but it is not all. We have to be, I think, optimistic that we can make a difference if we turn out in droves, if we are paying attention, if we are prepared eventually to get the system of campaign financing right in our country. So I think we need to be very observant in this election about who the forces are at work, how much they're spending, where they're spending it, and how. And if we can, the sources of that funding and the Center for Responsive Politics, and on our website, opensecrets.org, we're trying to scratch at the edges of those nonprofits, those non-disclosing groups that are hiding their donors. And we're finding bits and pieces and kind of tying together the network of who these people are and what their legislative agenda is, and trying to apprise people of kind of what's at stake. But you know, at the end of the day, the good news is that money isn't all it takes. You also have to have a threshold of viability in terms of skills, experience, knowledge, a good campaign system. I mean, you have to have kind of all of the pieces. These candidates must have all of the pieces of the puzzle in place, including, you know, hustle and name recognition, of course, for congressional campaigns, but also, you know, they have to be charismatic and likable and skilled. So money is a critical factor. It's not all it takes. You need more than that. But for those campaigns that are kind of have reached that vaunted status of big money, big ticket campaigns, it may, you know, the money is being leveraged in a very strategic way to get the most bang for their buck. And again, we might see a very changeable last few weeks of the election as that money is put into motion.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us today, Sheila Krumholz.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, I'm speaking with Sheila Krumholz, who's the Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics, a nonpartisan organization that tracks money, politics, and influence in Washington. She first joined the Center for Responsive Politics in 1989, serving as assistant editor of the very first edition of Open Secrets, the center's flagship publication. She has an article at CNN, Will Money Buy the White House? We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the big lies that are the basis of the Romney Republican campaign.
It's the money.